Welcome to A Crime Cast by Revamp. We're going to cover real crime stories from here in the Arkansas-Oklahoma area. We're going to cover crimes that took place from Fort Smith, Arkansas, all the way to Tulsa. But some of these you will be familiar with, and some of these you've probably never heard of. Even if you're not from the Fort Smith, Arkansas area, these may interest you greatly, because during one of our cases, it led us to the fact that we had a suspected serial killer that lived right here in the Fort Smith area, and he's traveled all over the South. We're just now getting his agenda together. Even though he was never arrested for any of the homicides in which he was the top suspect, he always seemed to evade arrest for the murders. Even in 1979, when they were ready to go forward with a murder indictment on him because of circumstances that are totally bizarre, he was not arrested. One of the interesting aspects about him is that when we researched him, we found out that he had grown up in this area with at least two other known killers. One of them was a serial killer, which was finally convicted of a rape and murder in Illinois. He was suspected of killing his wife and four children. Even though he was tried, he was acquitted on that murder. He was also connected to another death in Florida through DNA. So these guys all grew up here, and most of the public is not even familiar with them. We're also going to have a whole series of crime cast, and we're going to do interviews with a man who was a commercial fisherman most of his life, and he has found seven sets of remains along the Arkansas River. Now, what's interesting about him is he is also the father of a missing person, and she's a pretty high-profile case, so you don't want to miss any of those interviews, and we're going to have some videos on our website as well. Before we discuss the first unsolved homicide case and talk to our guest, let me tell you a little bit about Revamp. Revamp stands for Remember Every Victim and Missing Person. We are a nonprofit 501c3. We're based out of Fort Smith, Arkansas, and we have teams in Arkansas and Oklahoma. We also have team members as far away as Illinois. Revamp consists of a team of current, former law enforcement, private investigators, victim advocates, criminal justice students, and a whole host of other people. And that really gives us a unique perspective when we all sit down at the table to look at one of these cold cases. In today's crime cast, we're going to discuss the case of Diane Nelms. It's an unsolved homicide case from Crawford County, one that has been totally forgotten and yet still remains unsolved. We're going to talk with her sister, Cicely. We're also going to talk with a friend and coworker that saw her leave with the suspect, and he's the one that reported her missing. We're going to talk to Christy Petty, and she's going to tell us how Diane's case was brought to the attention of Revamp. I want to say thank you, Christy, for all that you do for Revamp, and I want to welcome you to our crime cast.
Thank you, Patty. It's great to be here.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about, let's give them a little background on how Diane Nelms came to our attention.
Okay. We were at the Fort Smith Library doing some research on the case for Lindy Reynolds, and I came across an article that Lindy's mother had did with a magazine. And she mentioned in there that Lindy had had a friend that had went missing about a year later, and that her name was Diane. And so we went digging into that, and I found an article from where Diane had went missing, but that was about it. There wasn't anything else that we could find on her, really. Apparently, her and Lindy were bar running buddies and hung out together at the bars and concerts and stuff like that. So they were really good friends in that area of life.
Now let's let the viewers or the listeners, let's let them kind of get caught up to date on Lindy Reynolds. Lindy's still missing, correct?
Yes, she's still missing.
So she's never been found, but the one we're going to cover today, Diane Nelms, she has been found, but they run in the same circles.
Yes.
So, and since that time, we have realized that she's been totally forgotten, right?
Yes, there hasn't really been anything mentioned about her. Like I said, we didn't even find her except for an article on another case, and there hasn't been anybody, I think, except for the Arkansas State Police had a case file on her, but it wasn't a whole lot of information. But other than that, there hasn't been any mention of her all these years.
And it took us quite a while to locate the Arkansas State Police file, because originally in that article that you read, it mentioned Sequoia County, which is in Oklahoma.
Right. So she lived in Salisaw.
Yeah, she had lived in Salisaw. So we searched Oklahoma records, Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation, medical examiner's records, everything. We could find no one that knew anything about this case. So then after you touched base with the family, we find out that she was actually located, her remains were located in Arkansas, on the Arkansas side.
Yes, it was believed that she was found by Lee Creek, somewhere Correct. On the Arkansas mm-hmm. side?
Actually, right outside of Cedarville, right outside the city limits of Cedarville. Yes. And so that's what told us that she definitely was found in Arkansas, even though the county of Crawford seems to be the primary agency. We contacted them. They did not have a case file at all on her. They had never heard of her. In fact, the people that were mentioned by the Arkansas State Police as being employees of the Crawford County Sheriff's Office cannot remember those remains being found.
Yeah, and that blows my mind. It being in their county, you would think they would have had a bigger case file than anybody else.
Yes, you would think. So we have emails that we have sent back and forth and corresponded with the sheriff's office. First, they told us that they could not find the file. They did search for the file for quite some time. Several people were involved in trying to locate that file. Then the sheriff told us that he was appointing an investigator to that file or to that case, and that it would be an active working case. And the last correspondent we got, he indicates that they've never had any involvement with that case. So fortunately, Arkansas State Police were the supporting agency, and they did an investigation, and at least we do have those files. But had you not come across that name at the library, we would never even be aware of Diane Nelms and it being an unsolved homicide case in Crawford County.
Right, and that just makes me wonder how many more are out there, how many more in that scene that visited those same bars may have came up missing and nobody knows about.
Isn't that the truth? So I'll tell you what, let's do. Let's start with her sister, and I did a telephone interview with her, and we're going to let you listen to it. She's going to tell us the whole story. I think you reached out to her originally, and then we followed up on it, and she gave us a lot of information. So let's go to Cicely, and let Cicely tell the whole story from the family's perspective.
She and her boyfriend and her son left in 1982 to go to Fort Smith. He had a job there, so he went there and they went with him. Sometime between 1982 when they got there and 1983, they split up. Diane and her son Kelly stayed in the Oklahoma Salisaw area. Diane was a waitress. She loved horses. Unfortunately, she was always drawn to the drugs that are, you know, the illegal ones, the one that you're not supposed to do.
Yeah, that doesn't give someone the right to kill her.
No, mm-hmm. No. She had a mother and five brothers and sisters and a son. She was drawn to the wild side. She was always a little wild.
I know you'd refer to her as a wild child. Yeah.
Yeah. But she was a good mother. You could tell she loved Kelly. She would never just leave him. She would make sure that he was always cared for. Unfortunately, she was in the drug scene. But, you know, we don't know what Kelly saw, what he witnessed. She worked at different clubs, and I mean, she was a waitress, cocktail waitress, mm-hmm. but she was a human.
Sure, she was. Beautiful girl.
So, in 1983, my brother graduated, my baby brother graduated high school, May of 1983. At that time, my mother had all of her chicks out of the nest. And then in July, everybody's world came to a screeching halt. We did not know she was missing. We didn't know anything until the police contacted mother and told her that Kelly was with a babysitter and they had not been able to find Diane. Mother sent photos, I think she sent her dental records and her fingerprints. So mother drives to Fort Smith, picks up my nephew, who doesn't know what's going on. Right. All he knows is his mother is gone and we don't know where she is.
Now she left her with someone that she had met. She was a bartender or a waitress.
Right.
She was a waitress at Tiffany's, which was on Rogers Avenue. I believe it's since been torn down. But a coworker of hers who was a bartender, he knew this person and recommended her as a babysitter. He was good friends with her and her mother. So Kelly, the little son, who was 8 years old, he was left with the babysitter while Diane decided to go out for the night.
Is that correct?
Exactly. Okay. Yes, yes. And from what I understand, she would call the babysitter, we're going to another bar, can he just stay? Mm-hmm. But she called twice, then nobody heard from her. And then a day goes by and nobody hears anything. And it just rocks on. After that, you know, you're like, where's going on? Then the police contact mother. She, you know, of course, we never knew what was going on. So, you know, when they say your grandson is with a babysitter and we don't know where his mother is, so many things rock through your mind. But we all knew that, yeah, she may have been wild. She may have been nonchalant about things, but she was a good mother. She always made sure that Kelly was taken care of. And all of a sudden, wham, she's not there. And we're all just wondering, okay, what has she done? What's going on?
Sure.
You know, it just rocks on. So mother she applied to become his permanent legal guardian. In case something did happen, Diane showed back up. Mother would not allow Kelly to be left alone again.
Sure.
What that did to Kelly was he was rather anxious and acted out. But, you know, if you tell him, I'm going to pick you up at 3 o'clock and you're not there at 3 o'clock, at 3:05, he's wanting to know, well, where is she? What time is she coming? What time are you picking me up?
Oh, that had to have a big effect on him that his mother never returned.
Exactly. It did. His mother and his father were divorced and had been divorced for years. So he didn't have a whole lot of contact with his father, Stanley. All he really knew was our family.
Sure. Now, his father had his own issues, did he not?
Yes, he did. He was very troubled. I won't go into that, but he was.
Yeah.
But we knew he loved Kelly.
Sure.
And his family loved Kelly.
Sure.
The few times they got to sing, they were unaware of the fact that Diane even had brothers and sisters. I found this out a couple of years ago when I was speaking with Kevin's sister, because she was wanting to get in touch with Kelly. And I was like, I'm Kelly's protector, I guess. I'm his self-appointed protector. I babysat him, offered to raise him after Diane disappeared. He's just always been mine.
Sure.
I was in high school when he was born, so I babysat all the time. I mean, yeah, mother had to go off on the weekends. Kelly stayed with me. I was married, had a daughter. Monica and Kelly became close and still are. You know, we never knew. Mother used to say, you don't know what he's been exposed to or what he's been through. And we probably won't ever know, nor do we want to know.
And it's probably a good thing he doesn't remember that, in case he was exposed to bad
things. I've spoken, you know, and I stay in contact with him. And I've spoken to him about it. And he's like, I have just really blocked that out, and I don't want to remember any of that. Some pieces come back, but if he doesn't want to talk about it, then I'm not going to make it.
Of course.
He's living in Dallas. He's, you know, kind of followed in her footsteps. But he's 45, 46 now, and age is catching up with him. So he has to kind of slow down a little bit. I'm like, oh, you know, I can't keep on this way.
So how many years went by? So the police call and tell your mother that they have reason to believe she's missing.
She's July 6th, I think, 6th or 7th in 1983.
Okay. And so what was the next thing that she heard?
Well, I'm not for sure. It was either Christmas Eve or Christmas night. Two hunters were in Van Buren Park, which I'm assuming they were on the Corps Engineer area, and came across skeletal remains and a belt buckle.
So then they call your mother and tell her that they have identified her remains?
Yes, they called, they called mother, and, you know, at least we knew, okay, but we knew she was gone, she wasn't coming back, but we didn't know why or who did this. Why did they do it? who was it that rocked on, you know, mother died in 2001, never knowing who it was that killed her firstborn child.
That's difficult.
Yes. And it, when we, when you called and told me everything, that that gave all, gave the family closure. I spoke with my sister and one of my brothers and let them know, and I had to tell Kelly.
And how did Kelly take it?
He did really well. I think I'm the one who tore up.
I know that it was difficult for you because you had searched for answers for so long.
Yeah.
So you talked to the rest of your family member. We furnished you with the Arkansas State Police investigative file.
Yes.
So that gave you a lot of answers. The last time that I talked to you, we talked about the file, and I divulged some of that information and offered to share it with you.
Yes.
Of course, we always remember we're here for the victim's family. That's what our whole goal is to provide the answers to the family.
Correct.
Now, when you got that file, when you got that phone call and you were told the information and then supplied with the case file, did that help with the closure?
It did. Diane and I did not get along growing up, but like I said, Kelly, as far as I was concerned, Kelly was, mine. It has helped me to come to grips with the fact that she is gone and, what's in the past is in the past.
Sure.
Telling Kelly about it was probably one of the hardest things I've had to do over the course of the last 4 years.
And I'm so sorry.
He came to live with me in September of 2019 after my husband passed away. And he stayed with me until February of 2020.
He got a
job. I drove him back to Dallas, and he's been there since, but we do stay in contact.
I wish that you could pass on a message from Revamp that we're really sorry about his mother. It was a tragedy. Sorry that it happened to him. I'm sorry it happened to your family. I am glad that you did get a little bit of closure, a few answers to some of your questions. And I hope that everybody will always remember Diane Nelms. She was a beautiful girl.
Yes,
nobody had the right
was.
To take her. And the guy that was implicated in her murder, we have found that he passed away several years ago in the Russellville, Arkansas area. I don't know that he's tied to any of the other cases, but we're going to explore another case of a friend of Diane's that came up missing a year before Diane, and she's never been found. So I don't know if there's a connection there or not, but Revamp will continue on until we get answers in that case as well.
I mean, it makes you wonder because there were several that died, like in a sequence type thing over the course of the years. One every year makes you wonder is there a pattern? Is it a serial killer? What is it?
We have found that in one of our following podcasts, we're going to cover a serial killer he wasn't just assumed. There's a man who lived in Fort Smith for several years who has been tied to several murders. It probably has no effect or no connection to Diane's murder since we know who killed her or we suspect who killed her. She was the last person seen with her. He admitted to his wife that he killed her. You've read the file as well.
Yes.
You saw what evidence they had. And, of course, they were all just statements, hearsay.
Yes.
People report repeating what he'd said. So they never made an arrest in her case. But when you read the case file, you really are left with no doubt.
Exactly. Yeah. When I read, page after page, they questioned him and then his lawyer shows up and then they question him again and the lawyer says, don't talk. And then they do the polygraph and it shows that he was not truthful.
Correct.
I forwarded the file to my brother and I haven't heard from him about that, but he wanted to know, when I called him and told him, okay, this is what's happened. And he said, do you have a file? And I said, no, but I'm sure I can get one. And that's when I contacted you and asked you, could you forward the file to me? I was anxious about opening it. I was like, I'm not sure I really want to know, but I'm a very curious person. But I was cautious.
Sure.
So I finally, after 2 days, I opened it and I was like, oh my gosh, the thoughts that had to be going through her mind. And when we had her service, I mean, it was, we didn't put it in the paper. We didn't, you know, we weren't, because there were extenuating circumstances. One, we didn't know. And two, that's going to be a hard question to answer. What happened to her? You know, where was she? That's, you know, and so it was mother's choice. We had it, the church. We had just, you know, a small service. Then we buried her at the cemetery where the rest of our family is buried. And it was just a quiet, hush-hush kind of thing. Not because we were ashamed, because we didn't know, and that was, you know, like I said, it was mother's choice, and that's what we did. I just hate that she passed away without knowing who it was, but I know now that she knows.
I believe so.
And they are together, so.
Well, Cicely, I so appreciate you telling us the story of Diane. I'm so sorry that it happened to your family. It's a terrible thing for a family to have to go through, especially to have to go a year and a half and not know, and then to go decades with not knowing what really happened.
Yes, we've all gotten closure now. I mean, it's helped a lot.
I'm so happy for
it really
that.
Has.
I'm sad that, you know, that you had to go through that. I'm sad that you had to go decades with not knowing, but I'm glad that Revamp was able to give you a little bit of closure. And may Diane rest in peace.
Thank you.
You know, Christy, it's one thing to be able to read these cases, but it's another thing when you hear the actual family that was affected by it.
Yeah, it's so sad that the family had to go all these years without having any answers at all. And that now, I believe Diane's mother has passed on, so she never got any kind of closure whatsoever for her daughter's death.
No, she didn't. And you know, as well as anybody, the effects that it has on a family, that to be a family member of a murdered victim that has never been resolved. I mean, it's bad enough when they know who did it, but to go years without knowing anything, I mean, you know that better than anybody.
Yeah, it's very hard. It plays tricks with your mind sometimes. It's kind of hard to explain the feelings that you get not knowing. It's very scary sometimes because you know that person's still out there. So I know where they're coming from.
So not only do we have the family to consider, we also have friends and coworkers and acquaintances. And that brings me to the next person that I interviewed, which was Wade Frazier. Wade was the bartender and the friend and the coworker to Diane. And he was really important in this case because he was the last person to see her leave with the suspect. So I think this would be an appropriate time for us to listen to the interview that was done with Wade at his home. And let him tell his side of what happened in his accounts.
My name is Wade Frazier. I was a bartender at a Tiffany's at the Ramada Inn in Fort Smith, Arkansas, where Diane was a cocktail waitress. Then I also worked two nights a week as a bartender at an after-hours club called the Foxfire, where Diane would come in after she'd got off work to have a drink before she went home.
How long had you known Diane?
Probably just a matter of a few months.
A few months.
Yeah.
So you both worked at Tiffany's.
Yes.
And then you were working at the Foxfire, and she came over after she got off work?
Yeah, after she got off work at Tiffany's, because I worked two jobs. I worked 7 days a week, 10 and bar, both clubs. And when she'd get off work at Tiffany's, sometimes she'd stop by the Foxfire and have a drink after work before she went home.
So the night that she was last seen, she had come to Foxfire after she'd gotten off work at Tiffany's.
Yes.
And she sat down at your bar.
Yes.
And she ordered a drink.
Yes.
Do you remember what she ordered?
No.
Don't remember. So you had actually, she had an 8-year-old son, and you had put her in touch with someone to babysit for her while she worked.
Well, no, actually, another bartender at Tiffany's had a daughter, and her daughter was a babysitter, and she babysat Diane's son while she was at work. And so this other bartender, name is Dee Olvera Webster. Her daughter was babysitting Diane's son the night she came up missing.
So they contacted you and told you that she's gone.
Yeah, Dee had contacted me the next day and asked, had I seen Diane? I said, yes, she stopped in the Foxfire last night, had a drink, and said that some guy had invited her to go out and snort a line of cocaine.
And she didn't say anything about who the guy was?
No.
Was there another guy in the bar?
It was some other guy that was in the bar. I mean, I didn't know who he was.
Do you remember what he looked like?
No, that's been so many years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time ago.
But Dee had called me the next day and asked, have I seen Diane? I said, yeah, she stopped in last night to have a drink after work. And I said, she went outside with some guy to do a line of cocaine. And she was talking about, she had to go pick up her son from the babysitter. So when Dee called me the next day, she asked, well, Diane never came and picked up her son, and that wasn't like her, because, I mean, her son was her whole world. And for her not to go by and pick him up was strange. So I went, I worked Saturday nights after hours, then I worked, I opened Foxfire on Sunday afternoons, did clean up, stocked all the bar, carried out all the trash. When I took the trash out to the dumpster, I noticed that next door to the Foxfire, pretty much in the same parking lot, there was an old Pizza Hut. Well, her truck was still parked behind the Pizza Hut.
And you recognized her truck?
Yes. Yeah, from me working at Tiffany's with
sure.
her. When I saw her truck, I called Dee and said, her truck's still here. Have you heard from her? And she came by to pick up her son yet? And he says, no. I said, well, I'm calling the police. Something's wrong here. So when the police came out, I explained to her about her being there the night before, leaving with some guy. And then when I came into work the next day, I found that her truck was still parked there. So I despite the fact it hadn't been a 24-hour period, I still said, there needs to be some kind of missing persons report filed on her, because she never showed up to pick up her son. She never came back to pick up a truck. She lived with some strange guy and hadn't been seen since.
So after we talked to Diane's family and to her friends and coworkers, we were made aware of some brand new knowledge that kind of hit us out of nowhere. We finally received the autopsy and medical examiner's report, the death certificate. She died from blunt force trauma to the back of the head. So that's new information that her family has just became aware of, even though they're very happy that at least they know there was a suspect. Now, that suspect, Christy, we tracked him down, correct?
Yes, we did.
And he's now deceased.
Yes, he passed away, I believe, in the early 90s.
Yes, and in not too far from here, which leads me to believe that he was connected to a production company, and he had keys to the Harry's bar. He obviously was people that was trusted. People trusted him. So it kind of makes you wonder how many more people he came across, how many more people came into contact with him, and even in the Russellville area where he later died.
That's right. It makes you wonder for sure how many, cold cases are up in that area that may be connected.
So let's talk about the suspect's girlfriend or wife. She lived with him at the time that Diane went missing, and she told some pretty scary stories about the suspect.
One night he came home and he was covered in mud. His car was covered in mud. And he just told her that he got his car stuck out by Lee Creek.
Now, what's interesting is her body was found at Lee Creek later on.
Yes.
He also made a comment to her that she would end up like Diane if she crossed him.
Yes. And that right there, makes him out to be a very violent man, especially if he's not getting his way. or if something happens that he doesn't like?
Well, there's still a lot of work to do on Diane's case, and we will keep the public updated on any new developments on that case. And I so appreciate all that you do for Revamp. I appreciate you being such an important part of Revamp. And let's look forward to the next crime cast.
I can't wait.
I can't either. Now that we've told you some about Diane Nelms, let's talk to Greg Murray. Greg is our webmaster. He's our tech guy. He goes on a lot of the interviews with us. He does all of our videotaping. And he also sits on our board of directors. So, Greg, let's talk about social media, shall we?
Oh, how much has it helped us? A ton.
A ton.
Yes, a ton. RememberEveryVictim.com is the website address. You can go there. We've got information on some of the cases, not all of them, because there's some we're still working on.
Correct.
And there are flyers that you can download and post them up, and so that we can get the word out on some of the cases. The flyers is probably one of the best tools that we have on the website right now.
And we encourage everyone to go out and print one of those and post it in a few places that you visit.
Yes, exactly. Because we've already got some information coming in just because of those flyers that have been handed out. We also have a Facebook page. You can go to the website to get to our Facebook page. And we do updates on the Facebook page basically, what, daily?
Pretty much. They also can follow our podcast on the Facebook page or the RememberEveryVictim.com. There will be links to all of them as they come out.
Yes, we're going to have pictures, story, detailing a little bit more about the cases that you hear on the podcast, a little bit more info that you're not hearing on the podcast that's going to be on the website. Just a lot of stuff that we're going to be doing
that's
for
right.
this podcast. Yes.
Mm-hmm. We're going to actually share some of the case files. We're going to, on this first one, we're going to share a few of the case files that may help.
So you can go there, download it, read about it, and if you have any other information, you can also email us at info@rememberEveryVictim.com if you see something on there that, hey, that reminds me of something that maybe somebody didn't know about. It's just a great tool to help us, help the families, help law enforcement, and that's the biggest thing. Revamp, it's more of a hybrid. Where we're helping not only law enforcement, but we're advocating for the victims, the victims' families, and helping them find closure, find the truth. And we're also helping law enforcement with some needs that they meet. Maybe they don't have a budget that could do testing. Maybe they need just a little bit more information that they haven't had in 20, 30 years. And that helps us a lot. It helps them a lot.
Some of the families feel like they have nowhere else to go. They've exhausted every means. They've exhausted every path. They don't realize that you really can advocate with the law enforcement agency. And we've had great success, not only with the families, but we have law enforcement that has referred us to cases, referred families over to us. And recently we were asked to help assist with the multimedia campaign to help with an unsolved case from the early 70s that happened in this area. It happened actually on the interstate there at Salsa, at the rest area. So we have proven ourselves. We also, like you said earlier, as we like to work to help bring law enforcement and the families together. And there's a word you like to use.
We like to bridge that gap.
Absolutely.
We are a bridge between the two because there's opportunity there that has been, in no better terms that I can think of, lacking. And that really, if you think about it, in a cold case, there's some things that the law enforcement cannot release to the family, but there's some things that the family is reluctant to release to law enforcement.
That's exactly right. There is a lot of skepticism, especially in the Fort Smith area. You know, we were able to, in one murder case, we brought forth new witnesses that have never been interviewed. We understand that they don't always feel comfortable talking to the police.
Absolutely.
So
especially in today's times. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And you have a divided Fort Smith in some ways. So I do understand it. I understand it. I've been a victim advocate for 20 years. And there's nothing that breaks my heart more than a family that has no answers. And a lot of times the answers can be found, they just don't know how to go about it. So Greg, before we close out of here and end this podcast or crime cast, there's something that I want everybody to remember. That Diane worked at a popular nightclub. She hung around with other girls. She had a friend that went missing. And probably most of our listeners have come into contact with her. If they were in the party scene or out socially during the 80s, they probably came into contact with her. They may have come into contact with the suspect and didn't even know it. Have you ever thought about how many times you come across a killer and you don't know it?
Every time I walk into a major retail store, every time I'm walking into a new place of business, or anytime I go out to eat, there are people around you. You have no idea.
That's right.
Of what they're doing or what their intentions are.
We just got through doing assisting with a ground penetrating sonar and a dig at a suspected serial killer's house. And this man lived here. He went to the casinos. He went to the bank. There's no telling where all he went.
And you never would have thought that this person.
No.
He lived next door to people for many, many decades.
He lived next door to a daycare.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's something to think about. And, you know, the killers of Melissa Witt, Morgan Nick, Lindy Reynolds, Tammy Jarvis, Buddy Williams. There's a host of them that have never been solved. And we don't know who killed some of those. Some of them we have suspects, but most of them we don't. And they may be in Walmart. They
may be your next door neighbor.
That's right.
They may be working in your daycare. They may be a school teacher. You don't know.
No.
And that is mind-boggling. But the biggest thing is, you may have a key piece of evidence in your memory that you don't know is evidence now, but later on down the road, hey, I remember a guy wearing a certain shirt, wearing certain pants, certain shoes, and he was at that specific place, and I remember that. That is the key to help find one of these folks' truths.
That's true. That's exactly right. So until the next crime cast, remember every victim.